This is HPR episode 2795 entitled Dead Earth and is part of the series Tabletop Gaming. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 37 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is a review of a 20-year-old, GNU Free Documentation licensed RPG about post-apocalyptic turmoil.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi everyone, you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. This is Klaatu, and in this episode I'm going to review a little RPG game called Dead Earth. Few game systems match the apathy and brutality of Dead Earth. Now, if you're a fan of Fallout, Rage, Mad Max, and all things post-apocalyptic, this game is one you have to try. And I do mean try, because surviving Dead Earth is by no means guaranteed. Dead Earth is just that cruel. As the game intro states, only one will mourn for your death, and that is you. Take heed. Dead Earth is out of print, and it has been for about, 20 years. But it was released for posterity under the GNU Free Documentation License. Now that's probably not the optimal license for game materials. It was certainly never the intent of GNU Free Documentation, I don't think, to serve as a game license. But that's what they had at the time, and it is, therefore, free to redistribute. Now, sadly, the copies that you're probably going to find floating around the internet today are often missing one thing or another. All the GFDL, that is GNU Free Documentation License, versions that I could locate had no artwork, because they were just, I think they were stripped PDFs, probably. And it makes sense, because I highly doubt that the art has been licensed freely. It was probably just the game rules that they licensed. And generally, these copies are missing little things here and there, just like, oh, we lost the column for the damage die in the weaponry column, or we forgot to print, somehow the table for weight and height effect, the charts for weight and height are missing. And there are just little bits and pieces that didn't make it in, so they're gone. Compounding the issue of incomplete material is that the writing of the rulebook, at its best, was arguably inelegant. Part of that is the natural style of the game. Dead Earth makes no pretense. You're the scum of the Dead Earth and deserve to be talked down to, taunted, ridiculed, and generally prepared for a quick and miserable death. That attitude sometimes extended from tone to grammar and spell checking, possibly not entirely intentionally. But then again, the authors of Dead Earth had a lot more planned than they were able to accomplish in the end before they had to fold everything up, so maybe the writing would have gotten a little bit more polished eventually. And Dead Earth was one of those games that kind of coexisted in printed material and with their website presence, so I'm not even sure how much of the printed material was considered, it may have been very much considered a living document, in spite of being Dead Earth. The game's amazing, though, and it's very unique, or at least in my experience, it's a unique experience. So one thing that I've done with the Dead Earth GNU Free Documentation License bundle is to instigate some critical updates to the PDF that you would need to actually play the game, which includes restored table layouts so that the charts are readable. Some of the PDF formatting had sort of decayed over the years due to presumably maybe changes in fonts, or rather the fonts not having been bundled into the PDF maybe, and just general shifts in the PDF format. Again, maybe. And I restored some charts that were previously missing entirely, and I even made some rule updates. So in one case, a new rule was begging to be created. So I've included both the old traditional method, the one that's in the original text of the book, but also an alternative. And so in the original game, you were told to roll 2d6, so that's 2 6-sided die, for each skill on your character sheet. If you rolled a critical success, that would be a 12, then you gained some special benefits to rolling on that skill later in the game. But if you rolled a critical failure, which would be a 2, the lowest possible roll for 2d6, then you got some special disadvantages to rolls on that skill during the game. The problem is that there are literally 100 skills on the character sheet. So if you were to do what the rule book told you to do whilst building a character, you are going to be rolling 2d6 100 times in a row and only marking down the 2s and 12s that you roll. So out of 100, maybe that's, I don't know, 6 times that you're actually going to be marking something down. So you're rolling 100 times for 6 things of note, worthy of note, and that's it. So I just couldn't, that there's no way to make that entertaining in real life. I've tried. I did. I've tried it. It's not possible. So this free revision that I'm offering offers an alternative rule, which is to roll a D100 to get a random skill from the 100 skill list, and then roll a percentage die to decide whether you're good at it, that is, if you roll 51 to 100, or bad at it, that is, if you roll 1 to 50, rather. So you repeat this process for a total of 6 times, and you have the average number of skills, more or less, that probably would have been affected by rolling 100 times, with some randomness thrown in to determine whether you had a net gain or loss. It's not an exact simulation of the original process, and I'm certainly open to hearing back from any maths experts on ways to make that even better, but in practice I do find that it achieves a close enough approximation, and close enough is the key phrase here. Dead Earth is brutal by default, so it's not entirely unintended that this alternative does lean toward more success than failure. Also included in my revised edition is a digital version of the character sheet. It's a spreadsheet that I did in LibreOffice, so that's like one of the 3 spreadsheets I've done in the past 5 years. And it's available, obviously, for all platforms because it's just a spreadsheet. And I'm assuming it would probably even work in an online spreadsheet. I have not tested it, but I don't see why it wouldn't be compatible. Now, technically, Dead Earth is actually pretty easy to manage on paper, so the digital version, I wouldn't say it was necessary, but it is a nice option to have, and there are some nice little features that I implemented, like if you have a natural ability in your D100 rolls that I was just talking about, then the skill that you have a natural ability in turns green, and if you have a natural inability to a skill, then it turns red. And there's auto-calculation for your maximum load based on your weight and your height and strength, and a few other little conveniences. And yes, you can download this whole thing. If you go to mixedsignals.ml and do a search for the Dead Earth post, you'll find that there is a P7-zip bundle of Dead Earth, the revised handbook, and then a bunch of other materials, and then the character sheet as well. And believe it or not, unlike my episode on PDF creation and stuff like that, this is not a trick. There are no embedded secret files in this download. It is purely for the fun of the game. So if you want a free copy of this freely distributable RPG, then go to mixedsignals.ml, do a search for Dead Earth, and you can find it. So what's it like? What's it like to play Dead Earth? Well, I don't have any sample play for you, but I certainly do have lots of thoughts on the game itself. So let's talk mechanics. Dead Earth uses 2 kinds of die, a d6 for skill and damage rolls, and a percentile die, which a percentile die is either a special die with double digits on it, 0, 0 through 90, and then a d10, and you roll, and the combination of those become your roll, or just a 2d10, and you can kind of fake it, you know, make it a percentile that way. The difficult, and that's all you need. Those are the only kinds of die that you need. It helps to have multiple copies of each die. Maybe not the D10s. You don't need that many D10s. D6s, you tend to need more than one. But it's not. There's not a whole lot of a die that you need. It's really just the D6 and the percentile. So the difficulty of tasks during the game that are not specifically based on a skill is set by the GM in anticipation of a percentile roll. So there are 6 shades of difficulty, and generally you succeed by rolling below 15, with 24 being difficult, 36 improbable, and 51 being improbable. That sort of thing kind of annoys me, I'll be honest, because I think in a good gaming system, everything should be pointed in one direction. That is to say, you should either always want to roll low, or you should always want to roll high. And in Dead Earth, I will admit, this is not the case. Sometimes it is better if you roll low, and then other times it is better if you roll high. So in a non-skill-based roll, you want to generally roll low, below 15. Otherwise, if you roll high, things become impossible for you to achieve. Now, skill rolls are different. Skill rolls are contested rolls, usually against an enemy. For skill-based rolls, and the skill-based rolls, I'm talking about the set of 100 skills that are specifically identified by Dead Earth as, well, special skills. If something falls within the category of one of those skills, then you're doing a skill-based roll, probably. And in these kinds of rolls, you roll as many d6 dice as you have levels in a skill that you're rolling for. So if you're level 3 in a skill, then you're going to roll 3d6, and so on. So obviously, as you're compounding die, your goal becomes to roll high rather than low, unlike the other kinds of skill checks. Okay, that's, as I say, I admit, that's not my favorite thing about Dead Earth, and it really is something about, I think, older RPGs that they just hadn't all decided yet that, you know what, it would be great to standardize across, you know, within a game, whether you want to roll high or low. And the problem persists today. There are still rolls in some game systems where, just because of probability or whatever, they've decided, it's better if you roll low on this one. And that's silly to me. But anyway, for instance, let's say that a player is attempting to pick a lock. But while they're picking the lock, they've been spotted. So some merc is running towards them angrily, probably to rough them up. So I might have the player roll their Jimmy lock die. That's like a Jimmy. Jimmying a lock means to pick a lock. So they would roll their Jimmy lock die against a running roll from the merc running towards them. The highest roll wins. Now that I quite like. I think that there is a lot of times in game systems, there's the expectation, especially to new GMs, there's the expectation that sometimes the role should just be you against me, and that's quite simple to understand, because there's no difficulty class to set, there's no range of success to consult, there's no table telling you whether you need to roll below or under a certain number. It is simply two people take the die that they should have in a skill, and they roll it, and whoever wins that roll off wins that encounter. And I think that's quite elegant. I really, really like that. It honestly takes me time to get used to that, because I'm so used to having some kind of table or some kind of number to equate a difficulty level to. And so it's funny that the contested role is something that I have to get used to when I switch over to Dead Earth. So in cases where a task is obviously related to a skill, but there's no one to roll against, for instance, when a player attempts to shoot a power switch from far away, maybe they want to shoot out, you know, like an alarm or something on the wall, and it's far, far down the mountainside in a compound, the DMG and PHB, that's what they call the Dead Earth books, the Dead Earth Player's Handbook and the Dead Earth Dungeon Master's Guide, I guess, are vague on how to set difficulty. So in these cases, I just invent a difficulty level for the task in terms of die, and then the player makes a contested roll against me, the GM. So for instance, if a player has 3d6 in the weapon specialty rifle, that's the WS rifle skill on the Dead Earth character sheet, and they're attempting to shoot that alarm or the power switch or whatever from, you know, let's say 400 meters away, we'll call it, then I might set the difficulty to, 4d6. That's 4 die per 100 meters, seems fair to me, and then the highest roll wins. You get skill points at the start of the game when building your character, mostly determined by your character's age. You use those points to gain levels in skills. You can pick 10 skill points to gain an additional die in any skill. So you're buying your skills with 10 skill points. Now, of course, some skills have prerequisite skills, so getting even one die in a skill could have a greater effective cost than just 10 skill points. So, you know, if you want to be good at the investigation skill, then you have prerequisites, and it's marked on the character sheet that you have prerequisites. You have to consult the handbook to find out what they are, but for the record, it's search and reason. So, and if you want to be good at intuition, for instance, since I have this page open, you need to be good at senses. And interrogate, you need to have the outright lie skill, and so on. So, and there are levels of dependencies, so it can become complex. You may have to trace it back a couple of levels to find out what you need to have in order to get the ultimate thing that you actually want. But that's how it goes. And instead of gaining experience points as you play, you're rewarded with skill points. So, and those, of course, you can use to then improve your character. So let's talk combat now. The combat system in Dead Earth it's precise, and I like to say it's lovingly laborious. But really, the way I think of it is VATS. I mean, if you're a fan of Fallout, this is more or less the RPG version of VATS. I mean, not necessarily, and I know that there is actually a Fallout board game, I think, out there, so maybe it actually approximates this better, I'm not sure, but that's the closest equation I could make for myself to kind of understand what they're driving at. It's going to seem pretty complex at first, but once you get the hang of it, once you do it, it's actually quite a lot of fun. So, somewhat counterintuitively, maybe, the initiative role, the role to see who goes first, is better if you roll high. Now, which means that you go later. So that's why it's counterintuitive. But it makes sense if you think about it. The lowest roll is going to go first, and making the first move in combat necessarily betrays your tactics and gives your opponent the opportunity to then counter move. So you want to roll high, which you might sometimes think is bad, although in Dead Earth it kind of confuses that pretty severely. So you want to roll high. You want to go later when you're going into combat. You do not want to be the first to make a move. A combat round is variable, depending entirely on your character's abilities. Some characters have only 2 moves in combat. Others have 6. Another might have 10. It just depends on your character build and your progression, you know, the way that you've leveled up. At the start of a combat round, the person with the lowest initiative roll declares all of their intended moves during that round. So you use up all your moves. You have 2 moves, you use them both right away. You announce what you're going to do. You have 6 moves, you do the same thing. Then the next lowest roll does the same. Now, some actions take multiple moves, so strategy is a combination of good attacks balanced with freedom of movement. All actions and their move costs and effects are on the back of the character sheet, so you kind of choose what you want to do and you budget what you can do according to what's on your page, what's there, right there. It's a menu. It's like a little menu for you to choose. Players who rolled higher than their opponent can adapt their actions to defend against attacks, so your actions are never locked in until you've actually taken them. Again, the higher your initiative compared to your enemy, the better, because you can then adapt what you thought you were going to do that round according to what actually happens. There are skills for attacks, defense, and evasion, so you can work your way up to being a better fighter by adding new tricks to your arsenal. Combat systems usually make more sense if you experience it or observe it, so I'm just going to I'll give a quick little sort of an example. So let's assume that Alice has 4 moves and Bob has 2, to keep it really simple. They're fighting a large brute mutant who has 4 moves. Selecting moves from the character sheet, the GM has the GM, who is playing the brute, obviously, has rolled the lowest initiative, so the brute is going to attack first. So that's good. That he's got a disadvantage now. He decides to have the brute do a hammer fist move on Alice. Now that costs 3 moves. So he only has four to spend. So he's just spent three to do a hammer fist on Alice, and he takes a jab, which is just a one move. It's a little punch at Bob. Now, unlike in D&D and similar, combat doesn't happen in 6-second rounds in the game world at time. Everything's declared by each player as an overview of their turn, and then it's all kind of sorted out. So this is why going first is a disadvantage. So now Alice knows exactly what the brute is going to do. She knows that her assailant is going to try to do a hammer fist move on her. It costs the brute three moves to do that. She can see that on her character sheet, so she knows exactly what she's up against. So she uses the special defend move from her combat sheet. It costs whatever number of moves the attack that you're dodging costs, but she figures it's probably worth it. So she still has one move left after that, so she decides to do a turn, which is one move, in an attempt to get behind her enemy. So in other words, she's looked at what the brute is going to do. She knows that his move cost three moves. So she spends three moves of her own to defend against it, and then she spends the extra one that she's got to maybe duck and cover and maybe, you know, do a roll behind him or something like that. I don't know. So Bob has two moves, right? That's what he entered this combat with. So he decides to take his chances with the jab from his foe. He'll just take that. He'll absorb it or whatever, or take the damage from it. And he's going to spend his two moves on a balance check in an attempt to trip his enemy. And that's the round of combat. So once it's all declared, then you go through each step of the combat and announce how it actually works out for the person. So the brute is first, so he takes the hammer fist. Then we look at Alice and we realize, well, that she's defended against that successfully. So that's null and void. So that's three moves out of the way for this round. And then we look at his next move, which is jab at Bob. So Alice succeeds in her turn, I would say. And the jab at Bob we would roll for to see if what happens there. And once that's resolved, then Bob, assuming he's still up and okay, can take his action, which is to attempt to trip his enemy, physically trip him to cause him to fall onto the ground. And he would roll for that, see if that's successful. And depending on the state of things, the next round begins, and all of the actions are declared again, starting with fresh, you know, with all the moves that you have available for each round. Now, it can get more complex from the player's perspective sometimes, because when you're declaring your action, you might get thwarted by an enemy who rolled a higher initiative than you. But if you declared that you were going to jump kick and then come down for a pile driver, but your kick didn't meet its mark because your enemy defended, your change can move to change, you know, to suit what you think has happened. And that's, again, the advantage of going later, because you find out how the your enemy's move resolves before you actually have to commit to taking the move that you declared you were going to take. So it's really nice. It's hyper tactical. It lets you get it right in there and throw and track just every punch that's being thrown and every kick that's being kicked and every roll on the ground to avoid a swing. You know, you get right in there, and it's just a dynamic and very kind of active combat system. A lot of people complain, I think, about combat systems like the D20 one in D&D, where a lot of times they feel like we're not really in there. We're zooming too far out, and we're kind of looking at the battle from way too far away. Whereas Dead Earth, there's no way to do that. It is what you are doing with every part of your body, and how long it takes, or how many, you know, moves it takes to meet your mark, and whether it succeeds or fails. It is very up close and personal. So it's a lot of fun, and it becomes collaborative too, because everyone at the table then has to, you know, you break out your scrap paper and you figure out how everything resolves. And there's no real chance of someone just sitting back and sort of spacing out while other people are in combat. You know, it is a very interactive process, and it is quite nice. Okay, so let's talk about character creation. As I've said before, I love character creation. I really do. I think it's a blast. So, first of all, the Player's Handbook encourages you to gather friends and build characters together. Now, this is something that I've never done in RPG playing before. I think the expectation in most RPGs, at least now, I don't know how it was before, but now it is... I shouldn't say I've never done it before, but anyway, the expectation I feel like in modern RPGs is that you bring a character to the game, or you show up early to build a character with the DM. But, and I have actually done character creation together, I guess, in a way. I did a game at a game convention, which was sort of a first edition D&D clone, and so I just brought little character sheets with all, like, what, 6 stats and a gear list, pretty much, was all it consisted of. And it was a high death count game. So if you died in the game, you just rolled up a new character right then and there and kept going. So it was a very fun and highly dynamic and instant kind of process. But Dead Earth encourages you to actually make the character build sort of your the session. Like, that's a get together, build characters together as a gaming session, and then on the next time you play, use the characters that you have built. I think that's a cool idea, and the process is pretty clear and simple, to be honest. It's maybe a 2 or 3 page process in the Player's Handbook. It steps you through it really, really clearly. I'm quite impressed with how explicit it is. Put this number into that box. You know, there's not a whole lot of flipping back and forth in the book. You just go through a checklist, you get your numbers, you put them on your player, your character sheet, and then you're done. So you roll the number of D6 prescribed in the handbook for each attribute, you consult the tables there in the book, you calculate the results. The Player's Handbook steps through the whole process, and it doesn't really talk about it too much. It just tells you exactly what you need to do. It's not quite as clear as something like Dungeon Raiders or, you know, first edition D&D, where you roll a couple of die and you're done and you're off to a dungeon. But it is a lot clearer than most modern D&D or Pathfinder or really modern game systems than I've personally experienced. Skill points and renown are the main currency for players in Dead Earth. So the renown are sort of it's a hybrid of like D&D's inspiration points and experience points, while skill points are like Pathfinder's skill ranks. Both help you level up your character, and probably more importantly, they help you, well, stay alive, because now you have more skills. We should talk about radiation. Radiation is a big deal in Dead Earth. So you first roll against the radiation table during your character creation, or you're likely to, anyway. The number of times you have to roll is determined by your character's age, because it is assumed that the older you are, the more radiation you've likely encountered in your lifetime. Makes sense. The age you determine earlier in the process by a percentile die roll. As you adventure, you have to roll against the radiation table depending on where you are in the Dead Earth world. Coastal regions, it is stated in the Player Handbook, I think, or maybe the Dungeon Master Guide, coastal regions and lowlands tend to have more residual radiation, so you might have to roll once a week, for instance. Other areas are less affected, so you won't maybe roll on the radiation table as much. But the radiation effects vary from, like, literal instant death sentences. Like, if you roll a 20 on the radiation table, decapitation, radiation blows your head right off. 10d10 to your head. Okay, so, I mean, that's it. That's a death sentence for your character. To major upgrades, so if you roll 11, crafty, add a d6 to your jury rig skill. Well, that's great. That's perfect. That's brilliant. So there are a staggering number of effects, something like, I don't know, 100 or 200 or 600. It's a lot of radiation effects on this table. Now, is it fun? Well, radiation in Dead Earth is harsh. It is unforgiving. It is detrimental. It is powerful. And yes, it is really, really fun. Everybody likes to roll die. That's part of the fun of the RPG. And the process of discovering just what radiation can do always makes for a memorable game night. I don't care how many times you sit down to read the Dead Earth Handbook, you don't get the full picture of what radiation can do until you experience it as a character. So it's very clear in the player's handbook that your adventurers are anything but normal. You venture into unknown territory, you brave radiation, you become mutated, you are feared by normal people. Radiation isn't just a game mechanic. It has in-game, like, social repercussions. So you will be changed by radiation, and it will alter how the world treats you. Now, it does take getting some used to if you're not, you know, if you haven't played a 20-year-old RPG before. If you're used to building characters with complex backstories and with these lofty dreams and high hopes for character development, Dead Earth is different. Characters in Dead Earth are disposable. They're simultaneously the heroes of the story and the meaningless NPCs meandering into somebody else's background. They will die. You have to accept that. Sometimes without the chance to fight back, you have to accept that. There's a realism to it, I mean, to some degree, right? Death can take you by surprise. Oftentimes it does. There's definitely an argument as to whether or not that level of quote-unquote realism is necessary in a game which you play for entertainment. So Dead Earth itself, it says in the player's handbook that this is a game. So what I add to that is just remember that it is a game. If instant permadeath doesn't appeal to you, then you can and should change the rule. If that doesn't fit your playing style, then just don't do that. If your character would have died during character creation and that's not pleasing to you, then just re-roll. It's acceptable to do that. I've done it. Totally, I've done it. I didn't regret it either. I've done it, and I was quite happy with it. If your character dies during the game, and that's not your style, you don't want your character to die, you don't want to be bothered with creating a new character, then just make a new rule. You can impose a penalty, like, okay, I didn't die, but I lost all my possessions. Or, okay, I didn't die, but I lost a rank in this skill, or in all my skills. Or maybe you've lost a limb, and now that's something that you have to deal with in-game. This is one of the inherent advantages of tabletop games. They're easy to reprogram. So take advantage of the flexibility if you have to. Because I know that a high death count may be fun for one game, or it may be fun for one group. It might not be as fun for other people, or it might just be too inconvenient. You might not want to have to build a new character, maybe, because it is a lot of rolling, so it is a job to rebuild. I do think that Dead Earth's character build process, especially if you've done it a couple of times, it is easy enough to do at the table, though. So if you're okay with a high death count, then it's not impossible to sit down and say, okay, you guys play ahead. I will be building a character, and then we'll meet up, and we'll keep playing. So that's totally something you can do. But if you don't want to, then like I say, you can just say, okay, well, I didn't die. That was an alternate reality. We all had a good laugh about the absurdity of my head being blown off by radiation, but that didn't really happen, so let's continue. It's fine to do that. You can just re-roll something that would have killed your character. Or you can just say, okay, well, they're unconscious now, and they will come back later. You know, certainly there's an argument as well for, yes, character death should happen. Otherwise, where's the tension, right? Where's the risk? But how often you want that to be something that can just happen out of the blue is up to you. Okay, so I'm saying that because I've heard some people critique Dead Earth for how brutal it is, really. But I love it. So anyway, let's talk about the setting really quick. There's not a whole lot of world building that goes on in Dead Earth. I mean, there is a little bit. There's like two pages of the sort of the history of the world. Like, how did we get here? Well, this is how. Now, the beautiful thing is, I think, to me, Dead Earth doesn't really need a whole lot of lore. I feel like of all the game systems out there, this is one of those that is just in our common, or at least within my bubble of reality, this is kind of common consciousness stuff. We all know, you know, just like we all know vampire lore, or we know zombie apocalypse stuff. That's what, you know, we all know the stuff when you say, okay, this is a post-apocalyptic wasteland or post-nuclear wasteland. You know what that means if you've ever played Fallout, or if you've played Wasteland, if you've ever read Vonnegut or Philip K. Dick or Jack Vance, or you've seen Mad Max, or you've seen 12 Monkeys, or you've seen I Am Legend, or whatever it is. We've all been there, right? We've all been in this world already. And so when there's this world that's being built dynamically during the game, then it's pretty easy for the players to just kind of make assumptions. It's a safe place to just say, okay, well, there's probably a burned out car somewhere. Can I rummage through the boot and see if there's a crowbar? So, things like that. You can make quick assumptions like that and let the GM roll with it as they will. So it isn't like in a fantasy game where you're not really sure whether, well, what kind of fantasy world is this? Are there ruins of a temple over here in the mountainside? Would that be a safe assumption, or is that not really a thing in this world? Or, you know, do the dwarves dwell underground here? Are they more like topsiders? And what assumptions can I make? For Dead Earth, all the assumptions are valid. Yes, you're in a post-nuclear disaster fallout zone, and all of the assumptions that you can make are valid. It's nice. You have a common language. That's it. That's everything I have to say about Dead Earth. As I have stated, it is a fun game. You should try it. It is free to download and to redistribute, so you can modify it to your heart's content. I have. And yeah, you should download it. You should give it a go if you're up for a game. I would love to do an HPR episode of a playthrough of Dead Earth, but the logistics, of course, are ever complex. But shoot me an email if you're interested, because I'd be interested. Until such time, have fun building characters, avoiding radiation, and I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.